Good afternoon, and thank you all for standing by. For the duration of today's conference, all participants' lines are on a listen-only mode until the question and answer session. At that time, if you would like to ask a question, press star one. Today's call is being recorded. If you have any objections, you may disconnect at this time. It is my pleasure to introduce Mr. Benjamin Haynes. Thank you, sir. You may begin.
Thank you, Holly. Thank you all for joining us today for the release of a new CDC vital signs on the HIV epidemic in America. We are joined by Dr. Jay Butler, CDC's Deputy Director for Infectious Diseases, and Dr. Eugene McCrae, Director of CDC's Division of HIV/AIDS Prevention. Following opening remarks, we will be joined by Dr. Norma Harris, the first author of the vital signs, who will join us to take your questions. I'd now like to turn the call over to Dr. Butler.
All right. Well, thank you. Good afternoon and or good morning if you're in the West. Thank you for joining us today. If you regularly join these briefings, you're aware that CDC works 24/7 to protect Americans against health threats. And each month, CDC's Vital Signs Report is an opportunity for us to focus on one of CDC's public health priorities and what we can or is being done to address them. Today's report provides the latest data on the status of the HIV epidemic in America. It shows that HIV testing, treatment, and prevention have not reached enough Americans, and it emphasizes the continued urgent need to increase these interventions. Now is an exciting time. As you're probably aware, the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services and its agencies have taken on the goal of ending the HIV epidemic in America by 2030. This is an ambitious goal, but with swift and bold action, not only is it achievable, we can get it done. We can end the status quo, providing that we change our expectations and the culture of satisfaction with where we're at now. We at CDC have been going around the country and have had opportunity to meet with many people who are committed to ending the HIV epidemic. We've met with clinical and public health practitioners, elected officials, people with HIV or at risk of HIV, and I should say that these are not mutually exclusive groups, but all people who've been working tirelessly in this field for some decades. And we have consistently heard three very important things. One, our nation's public health community, and really all of us, are ready to end the HIV epidemic. The science is there. We have the tools. Second, there's a critical need to fully engage the community, to include new voices, and to build capacity at the community level, that is, by the community and for the community. And third, to be successful, we must also address social determinants of health. Too many Americans, including those with HIV or at risk of HIV, are facing serious issues that affect health and well-being, including homelessness, addiction, and unaddressed mental health issues. With the right resources and in collaboration with public health and other community members, we can work together to end the HIV epidemic. The three main findings of the report echo these urgent needs. More than 150,000 Americans still don't know that they have HIV and need to be tested. Not enough Americans with HIV have the virus under control through effective treatments. And there's a daily pill that can prevent HIV, known as PrEP, or pre-exposure prophylaxis. But this has not reached enough people who could benefit from this important prevention tool. We made a lot of progress in the late 90s and into the early part of the 21st century in reducing the number of new cases of HIV. But HIV prevention progress has stalled in America since 2013. And this stalling underscores the need to increase resources, deploy new technologies, and build expertise, particularly in areas where they're needed most. That's why, to achieve maximum impact, the federal initiative focuses on three of the areas that we're highlighting today in the Vital Signs report. It also focuses on 57 geographic areas, which include 48 counties, the District of Columbia, and San Juan, Puerto Rico, where nearly half of all new HIV infections occur. Additionally, we're focusing on 7 states where there are particular concerns about transmission of HIV in rural areas. Even as we speak, these 57 areas are currently working on their own local plans. These plans are based on local community input that directs how to scale up locally to achieve our 10-year national plan of eliminating new HIV infections. Those strategies are, first of all, HIV testing. With a national target of diagnosing at least 95% of HIV infections, diagnosis is important because that is the pathway then to the second phase, HIV treatment. With a national target of at least 95% of people with diagnosed HIV having the virus suppressed, this is not only life-saving and results in a near normal life expectancy, but it's also an important prevention tool. It's important to recognize that people with undetectable virus are virtually unable to transmit the virus to others. So the math equation is U equals U, undetectable equals untransmittable. And third, speaking of prevention, preventing new HIV infections with proven interventions, including PrEP. The national target is for at least 50% of people at risk for HIV and who are eligible for PrEP to be receiving it. Nothing in HIV prevention has been or ever will be accomplished apart from the communities. That's why active and ongoing community involvement, both nationally and locally, has remained a critical part of the national framework. Community efforts are critical to achieving our ambitious goal of reducing new HIV infections by 90% by 2030. So to summarize, the goals are to test, treat, and prevent, and we can end HIV by 2030, which is a summary as well as a haiku. Now, I'm going to turn it over to Dr. Eugene McCrae, Director of CDC's Division of HIV/AIDS Prevention, who will discuss the report's findings in more detail.
Okay. Thank you, Dr. Butler. I first would like to echo Dr. Butler's sentiment about the importance of the urgent opportunity before us. Ending the HIV epidemic would be one of the greatest public health triumphs in our nation's history. That achievement would also be a testament to the decades of HIV advocacy, community involvement, and scientific and public health efforts that have driven HIV testing, treatment, and prevention in our country. The findings from today's report clearly show where we need to focus efforts. First, in 2017, 14% of people with HIV did not know they had it. That's about 154,000 people. Without a diagnosis, they couldn't take advantage of treatment that would help them stay healthy and prevent transmission to others. The proportion of people with HIV who knew their status varied by age. For example, just over half of people younger than 25 had received a diagnosis, compared to 95% of those aged 55 and older. Second, in 2017, over a third of people who knew they had HIV were not virally suppressed. That's about 318,000 people. Good treatment is good prevention. Viral suppression is a marker for effective HIV treatment. People who get virally suppressed quickly and stay virally suppressed live longer, healthier lives. Effective treatment also prevents HIV transmission. Young people, African Americans, and people who inject drug are least likely to be virally suppressed. Third, 1.2 million Americans could benefit from PrEP. However, only about 13%, or about 152,000 people, were prescribed PrEP in 2017, and about 18% were prescribed it in 2018. That's about 220,000 people. This is a minimal estimate of PrEP coverage. It reflects most, but not all, prescriptions from U.S. retail pharmacies or from all organizations that fill PrEP prescriptions. So there's been a rapid increase in the number of people taking PrEP over the past 3 years, but there is no doubt that PrEP uptake is too low, and we are working hard to increase access to PrEP, especially among gay and bisexual men, women, transgender people, young people, African Americans, and Latinos. Finally, the number of people who acquire HIV each year is unacceptably high and is at a standstill. CDC estimates that new infections remain stable from 2013 to 2017, with about 38,000 infections occurring each year during that time frame. In this case, stability is not good. A previous analysis found that the number of new HIV infections declined by about 14% from 2008 to 2013. We estimate that an additional 21,000 infections were prevented as a result of this decline. That decline has stopped. Again, these findings underscore the urgent need to rapidly scale up HIV testing, treatment, and PrEP. And we know our national goals can be achieved. Across the nation, some states have made great strides in progress. For example, 5 states are close to or have exceeded diagnosing 95% of HIV infections. In 18 states, at least 2/3 of people with diagnosed HIV are already virally suppressed, and 3 jurisdictions have already achieved at least 1/3 of PrEP coverage. Our national goal can be accomplished with the right use of science, technology, and resources, and the continued commitment of people with HIV, communities affected by HIV, and public and private leadership, all working together. I'd like to close by highlighting 3 things that everybody can do right now. First, get tested for HIV. Second, talk to your healthcare provider about HIV prevention options, including PrEP, condoms, and, if relevant, syringe services programs. And third, stay healthy by taking your medicines as prescribed if you have HIV. These data show us exactly where we need to really focus our prevention efforts to end the HIV epidemic in America. We have the tools, we have a plan, and we have national commitment. Now I'll turn it back to the moderator.
Thank you, Dr. McCray, and thank you, Dr. Butler. Holly, we are now ready for questions.
Thank you. If you would like to ask a question, please unmute your phone, press star 1, and when prompted, record your first name and last name clearly so I may introduce you. To withdraw your question, press star 2. Again, to ask a question, press star 1. It may take a few moments for questions to come in. Please stand by. Our first question is from Mike Stobie with the Associated Press. Your line is open.
Hi, thank you for taking my call. I have 2 questions, if I may. Doctors, could you say why there's been a stall since 2013 in new HIV infections? Could you speak more to that? And also, in the 57 areas that you're focusing on, some of these areas also have been dealing with hepatitis A outbreaks and rises in STDs. Are there joint efforts going on to address those too, or is it just HIV? Do you mind speaking to that too? Thank you.
Sure. This is Jay Butler. Let me start with the second question first, because I think you raise a very important point that as we talk about ending HIV transmission, there is also the opportunity to end transmission of other bloodborne pathogens. Hepatitis C is a great example of an infection that is particularly associated with self-injection drug use. But hepatitis A is also an example, given some of the populations that are most heavily impacted by the current epidemics of hepatitis A, which are occurring around the country. So it's not going to be so much a part of a national plan as something that at the community level can be addressed as a secondary gain to what we do as we address the HIV epidemic. It also highlights the importance that part of what is different now is that much of what has been done in the past and has been very successful to address HIV has been to apply national plans nationally. But there are inequities in the impact in the HIV epidemic. And to address those inequities, we recognize that there needs to be different actions taken in different communities. And so that's one of the reasons why earlier we were talking about how in each of these jurisdictions, they are developing individual plans that will help us move forward to sort of unstop that stalling in the decline of cases. So the first question, I think, in many ways may be a bit unanswerable because it's going to be different in different locations. And I'd be happy to turn it over to Dr. McCray if he may have some further thoughts on that.
Sure. So I mentioned earlier that progress in reducing new HIV infection, we had a lot of progress, and then since 2013, that progress has stalled. And some of that stalling is related to, at a national level. We've seen progress in some groups, but there are other groups where that progress is not being seen. For example, young people, especially young folks under the age of 25. Young MSM between the ages of 25, men who have sex with men between the ages of 25 to 34, especially Black and Latino MSM, these are groups where we've seen as much as a 50 to 60% increase in the last few years. And then, of course, we are not seeing reductions in some other key groups in geographic areas like the South. So, we've done a great job and we've gotten to a certain point, but in order to really continue to see those decreases or reverse the stalling, we have to do things differently and get to the populations that are now experiencing the most disparities. So, that's what this initiative will allow us to do, is to allow us to target our resources to those geographic areas and to those populations that are now experiencing increases in HIV.
Next question, please.
And our next question is from Lenny Bernstein with The Washington Post. Your line is open.
Thanks very much for taking my question. You guys report in the MMWR that only 40% of people over 18 have ever been tested for HIV in their lifetimes. And I'm just wondering where the system is falling short. Exactly where should people be tested? Is it when they come into the ER for an injury? Is it at a community health clinic? How can that number be so high if HIV has become sort of a routine test?
Thanks for that question. And this is Jay Butler. I think the answer to the question is yes. People need to be tested in all of those places. And I would add to that in their primary care provider's office as well. So wherever people are interacting with a healthcare provider, testing needs to be performed. There's also, I think, opportunity at the community level and through our public health partners to get the testing out to where people are. That we probably need to not assume that individuals are always going to come in to be tested, but we need to get testing out to where the people are.
Next question, please.
And our next question is from Selena Simmons-Steffen with NPR. Your line is open.
Hi. So I've heard you and others say that 1.2 million people are at risk of getting HIV. And this morning there was a call, HHS was talking about how, you know, more people can be reached with PrEP and preventative services by this program that provides free PrEP to people who don't have prescription drug coverage, but that still doesn't get close to providing preventative support to those 1.2 million people. It's less than half that would be on PrEP and eligible for that coverage. So I'm wondering about how the CDC is thinking about reaching the rest of the 1.2 million people who are at risk and what programs might be coming to kind of reach those folks and get them access to preventive care.
Okay, this is Jay Butler. One point of clarification, and I apologize if we weren't clear on this. So PrEP is for people who are not currently infected, and the 1.2 million that we were discussing are people who are actually infected with HIV and would not benefit from PrEP. We're focusing on treatment to suppress the virus for people who are infected and PrEP is a tool for prevention for people who are not infected.
And this is Dr. McCray. I'd like to add that, you know, there are approximately between 1.1 to 1.2 million people who we've determined based on some modeling to be eligible for PrEP, meaning that they could really benefit from getting on PrEP. And so CDC is doing a number of things in addition to the program that you heard about this morning. CDC is doing a number of things to get more people on PrEP. We're working with working to inform and educate providers about PrEP, including updating our clinical guidelines, offering, you know, charts and checklists and various tools that providers can use during the evaluation of patients to really help them determine whether that person is eligible or should access PrEP. And we also are supporting things like telephone hotlines so that a person can call and say and learn where in their community they can go to get PrEP if they're interested, et cetera. There's also a number of campaigns that are targeted toward potential consumers to make sure they are aware so that they walk in their doctor's office, they know that they know to ask for PrEP. And then but the key really is when people come in, making sure they have access to sort of a sexual health evaluation so that you can determine together with the client whether they are at risk for HIV and then make informed decisions. Now, I recognize that some of these folks will never go to a clinic, so we need to also think of other innovative ways to make PrEP available to individuals. So we're looking at models like pharmacy-based PrEP. We're looking at sort of community-based PrEP, tele-PrEP. So there are a number of different options that we're looking at that are evidence-based or evidence-informed that will help us get PrEP to a lot of folks that haven't been able to access it in the past.
Yeah. So to summarize, viral suppression is for people who have HIV, and PrEP is for people who are at risk of HIV.
Holly, we have time for a couple more questions.
Thank you. Before we go to the next question, again, if you would like to ask a question, please press star 1, unmute your phone, and record your first and last name clearly so I may introduce you. Our next question is from Kimberly Leonard from the Washington Examiner. Your line is open.
Hi. You touched a little bit on what I was going to ask about, but I wanted to just clarify. I'm looking at California's recent bill to allow pharmacists to prescribe PrEP directly to patients, and there are some guardrails around it, as I'm sure you're aware. Is that kind of what you're talking about in terms of what the administration might be supportive of? Because I know that in other areas, the administration has encouraged states to expand scope of practice laws as a way to make sure people have more access to health care. Thank you.
Yeah, thank you for raising that question about the new law in California. And I think it highlights the opportunities that we have all around the country to be innovative, to look at ways that we can provide treatment as well as prevention services to as many people as possible.
And I have no more questions at this time, but again, if you would like to ask a question, press star 1.
Holly, if there are no more questions, we will just go ahead and conclude the call. Thank you, Dr. Butler and Dr. McCray, for joining us today, as well as reporters. For follow-up questions, please call the press office at 404-639-3286. Or send an email to media@cdc.gov. Thanks again.
And this concludes today's conference. Thank you for participating. You may disconnect at this time. Speakers, please stand by for post-conference.